Well, welcome to another morning talk at this 2010 Easter retreat. I think it's a Tuesday talk for fifth day, sixth day or something, somewhere like that. And again today, I'm just keeping on giving advice, encouragement, skillful means on the path of letting go, making the meditation deeper. I know that sometimes on a retreat in the middle, sometimes people get a bit frustrated. And there was an old simile of Ajahn Chah, he would often do this. And again, I've got a good enough memory. I remember the place where he showed me this little technique coming back from arms round. Because a couple of years ago when I was in Thailand, I passed the very spot. And it sort of brought back the memory. Just the middle of the arms round, he just picked up a stick from the side of the road, turned around and said, "Is this heavy?" And before I could answer it, he threw it back into the bush. "It's only heavy if you keep holding it," he said. And of course, it was one of those teachings, very profound, very simple, but because he actually did it with a gesture, it made more of an impact into your mind. So, anyone who's getting frustrated, why? Is that heavy? Only because you're holding it. Any of you are still worrying about the problems in your family or in your life? Why is it heavy? Why is it creating a problem for you? It's because you're holding it. So we learn how to actually to throw things away and not keep them. Even the meditation you just did a few moments ago, if you hold it, it does become heavy. If it's a great meditation, that too is a heaviness which stops you being light enough to free yourself to go deeper into meditation, let alone sort of the disappointing meditations which you might have. And that can just, you grab onto that, that was a bad meditation, and you can feel that negativity sort of start to grow inside of you, you know, the lack of confidence and sort of the frustration, the heaviness of the mind, simply because whatever happened in the past, you refuse to let go. We keep grasping onto these things. So it's a nice little simile you can recall that whenever you get into the stuffed head part of the meditation retreat, things are really going tough. You're not really getting anywhere. You're getting frustrated. You're wondering how many more days are left. Can you really do this? Remember, you're just holding on to something. So imagine all of that pain, all that suffering, all of those ideas, thoughts, concepts, memories, which is causing you pain, maybe like a big heavy stick. And stop holding on to it. Just throw it into the bush. And if you really want, that doesn't work, just go into the forest. Pick up a stick. And then when you pick up that stick, think, this is all my family. And throw it as far as you possibly can. This is my stupid brain. Chuck it into the lake or whatever it is. And if you actually do that physically, at the same time you're identifying that heavy, heavy stick with the problems in your life and you throw it away, psychologically it helps. You've actually done something and it works. So one of that forms of letting go is just learning how to throw things away, chuck things out. And don't keep so much. The old simile which, you know, I use, and these similes, you put them aside for a while, you bring them out after one or two years, and I brought it out in Indonesia, was a simile of my mother's mantel shelf. In English houses, usually above the fireplace, if you haven't got a real fireplace, it's a mock fireplace, you have a shelf, it's in the main room of the house, so on that shelf you put all your mementos, you know, your photographs of your family and loved ones. So, the first time I went to visit my mother after being in Australia for a few years, what can I get my mother as a gift? Something Australian. And so someone kindly gave me a kangaroo. You know, a little toy kangaroo, a stuffed kangaroo. You know, like a nice fluffy toy. And so when I brought it, it's something from your son, for your mother from Australia. Oh, she loved that kangaroo, so she put it on her mantel shelf. About 3 or 4 years later, or 2 years later, whatever it was, when I went to visit her again, it was still there. But this time, I had a little cuddly koala, another toy. And so she loved that one too, and she put it next to her kangaroo. And the next year, a kookaburra. The next year, a platypus. I managed to get my platypus from one of these shops. And the final year, not the final year, but the final year I bought her stuff, it was a wombat. managed to get a nice soft wombat toy. By this time, her shelf was so full. She tried to put that wombat on the shelf and everything else fell off. And I said, "Mom, just throw this other stuff away." She said, "Oh, no, I can't. I got that from your brother when he went to Switzerland. This is a photograph of me with my cousin sort of years ago. And all these little animals, and when they come from you, I know why." So she couldn't put anything on the shelf. Every time she tried to balance one thing on, the rest fell off. That's called nervous breakdown. You got so much in your brain, and one more thing in there, and you go crazy. Why do people do that? Just because they can't throw things away. So now if that was me, I got a kangaroo, I'd put that on my shelf, and then when the kookaburra came, I'd throw the kangaroo away, put the kookaburra up there. When the wombat came, I'd throw everything else out and just have a wombat, one thing at a time. Now that one thing at a time practice, one thing in your brain practice, is a very peaceful place to be. So you don't have all this clutter which people have in their brains. So in this meditation retreat, easy. One thing at a time. Even when you have your lunch, the old one spoon, one fork at a time practice. You've heard that one before, many of you, some of you haven't. But when you're eating, you see people, if you go past them, have a watch, you know what they're doing. They've got a morsel in their mouth, which they're chewing. They've got another one waiting on their spoon, next in line. They've got heaped up on their plate, that's number three. And they're fiddling around, sort of with their fork or the spoon, heaping up what's going to come afterwards. They're about three or four spoons ahead of themselves. One spoon at a time practice means, when you have your lunch, one spoon or fork, you put it into your mouth, you mindfully chew it, and only when it's swallowed, only then do you start contemplating what you're going to have next from your plate. You're not three or four morsels ahead of yourself. Try that. You'll have a better digestion because you're being mindful of what you're actually eating right now, not what is going to come next. It's one thing at a time practice, so you're throwing all these other concerns away. And so when you're eating, you're not thinking about the talk or the meditation, you're just enjoying your food. When you're walking, you're just walking in the bush, not thinking about anything else you have to do. So you're keeping a very simple mind. The last meditation doesn't exist. Next meditation hasn't happened yet. So all you have is just one little meditation existing now. 1 minute, 1 second, one moment, which is happening now. And everything else you throw away. Number one, you can do that. It's permitted. It's allowed. You don't go crazy. Things don't go wrong. In fact, they go very right when you learn how to chuck things away and have this mental shelf in your mind. But you've only got one thing. What's happening now? With no plans. So when you start your meditation, don't think, right, this meditation, I've only got 45 minutes. So I'll do maybe 2 minutes of just relaxing the body. Then I'll do 3 minutes of metta meditation. After 3 minutes of metta meditation, then I'll do just a little bit more relaxation. And then I'll sort of just contemplate all the good things I've done in life to get me some inspiration. After I've done that, then I'll just be in the present moment. And I'll imagine the sort of the 1,000-petal lotus. And if that doesn't work, then I'll watch my breath. And if I watch my breath, I won't watch at the tip of the nose. I'll do it, as Ajahn Brahm says, just wherever the breath happens to be. If it doesn't work out, I'll do the backwards breath meditation. Stop messing up your minds. So you just keep it really, really simple. That's why. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Really, I should have only given one talk on this retreat. Just sit down, make peace, be kind, be gentle, then shut up. You know, there's one of my friends, one of the great... He was actually also expelled from Wat Pa Pon, by the way, just like me. That was Ajahn Gunha. He was the guy who patted the snakes. And he, whenever he teaches about meditation, all he does was just... Very simple but powerful technique. Breathe in, sabai, Supine means just nice and easy and beautiful. Just breathe in, Supine. Breathe out, Supine. No jhanas or nimittas or watching the breath or anything else. None of these, you know, letting goes at seven enlightenment factors and five hindrances and all the other stuff which you've pad out the talks with. Just breathe in, Supine. Breathe out, Supine. That's the only instruction on meditation he gives. And he's a brilliant meditation teacher. So can you do that? Keep it simple? Of course you can't, because you're Westerners or Western trained. You know, you want it complicated. You want all the information. You want to see it this way, that way, and another way. Round from the back, top on, bird's eye view, underground view. You want to see it every which way round. But it's so simple. Just let things go. If your mind is complicated, how on earth do you reckon you get any peace in life? Keep it simple. And just learn how to throw things away. The whole meditation retreat, not what you can attain, not what you can, you know, some more. I actually never made it to the Scouts, I was just in the Cubs, I was too lazy. But when I was in the Cubs, you get all these badges in the Scouts, you know, for being able to light a fire, being able to camp, being able to sort of tie knots. You know all the badges sometimes people get? This is not Buddhism, you don't get badges. I don't give you a badge, first jhana badge, second jhana badge. You know, Nimitta badge, for those of you who got nothing at all, the dunce's cap. You don't give those things out, because there's no badges. It's not just what you can attain, it's just what you can give up, how much you can let go, how much you can become free. Not how much you can know, but how little you can sort of amass. So you're really in the moment, present, simple, free, peaceful. So you try and keep it as simple as possible. So that's one way of like letting go, throwing things out. One of the similes which I've given, which is helpful because it gives you a vision, is actually imagine you're in the hot air balloon simile. Hot air balloon. If you're in the basket of a hot air balloon, if you're carrying too much baggage, all your suitcases, your sandwiches, thermos, and a packet of instant noodles to eat up the top there, and your cameras and your notebooks and your mobile phones and computers just in case someone SMSs you. If you carry all that rubbish, you know, in the basket, it's not going to get anywhere, is it? It's not going to even take off the ground. So you've got to throw all of that stuff out. I remember someone telling me once, I think it was a flight going to India, Singapore Airlines. And they had to actually get all the passengers off because there was too much baggage and the plane wouldn't take off. Someone told me that actually happened. That was the days before they actually restricted the baggage, especially the carry-on baggage. It was just so many people and so much baggage, it was just too heavy. Just like some of you, the reason you can't take off into jhana land is because there's too much baggage. We should sort of have sort of baggage restrictions before you meditate. Not even 20 kilograms, no kilograms, no family, no past, no future, no worries about your health, nothing, to throw all that out. So baggage restrictions apply on Buddha Airlines. You can't take anything with you. And if you go into that basket of a balloon with hardly anything, of course you rise really high. But whatever you do, the lighter you are, the higher you go. There always comes a time when you get stuck. It may be delightful breath or even nimitta. And whenever you get stuck, even if it's close to the ground or high up, what should you do? You look in the basket and see, what more can I throw out? What more can I abandon? Not what more can I get, but what can I give up? And if you look around your basket, you always find some sort of rubbish there you can throw out. You know, your sandwiches or whatever, or your lucky meditation cushion. Throw it out. And then, of course, you go higher. So at any blockage in meditation, you look around with this simile of letting go. What more can I give away? What am I holding on to? What's stopping me from going further? And you get to this wonderful stage. It's usually like around the nimitta stage, where you've gone so high, you just can't get into the jhanas. You look around, like being in a basket. You look around, there's nothing left in there. The basket's totally empty. Why can't I get further? And then you realize, the basket. So you untie the basket, you just hold on to the balloon. You throw away the basket. That is a simile of when you get so high, you totally let go of your body. Because your body, many of you know this, is basket case. It's hopeless, your body. Some of you are getting so old and sick. It's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. So you throw your body out, totally abandoned, concerned for your body. And that's when you get into the jhanas. Body totally disappeared. No hearing, no seeing, no smelling, no tasting, no touching. No perception left of the body, totally in the realm of the mind. The basket is let go of. And there you are, happily holding on to the balloon. And you can get no higher. Yeah, jhanas, but you're not getting enlightened yet. So how can you go higher? What else can I throw out? It's just the balloon and me. Aha! Me! So you throw yourself off. And then the balloon goes all the way up to Nibbana. You've let go of your body. Now you'll let go of you. And that's what we do to get enlightened. Have to let go of totally everything. So that's a great simile of how to become enlightened. Just let go of everything. Throw everything out until there's absolutely nothing left. That's why one of my favourite poems from, if you want to inspire yourself, just remember this one. It's a beautiful poem, inspirational, and it's a great path to enlightenment. It's from Buddhaghosa. He says, the path in the Visuddhimagga, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Nibbana is, but not the person who enters. Very beautiful. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. A traveller, a doer, a mover, a you. If you're travelling, trying to get somewhere, going on to the next stage, trying to reach something, that's called travelling. People with goals are travellers. People always moving are travellers. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. If you're a traveller, there is no path for you. So you're not travelling, you're not going anywhere. You're here, still, not going anywhere. No more travelling, no more going, no more motion. Then you become very still. And the least you travel, the wider that path becomes. The more you disappear, the more your wanting, will, craving, doing vanishes. The path becomes a superhighway, you can't miss it. There's nothing but the path. It becomes so simple. So remember, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. So if there's any travelling, you've lost the path. Great saying of Buddhaghosa. And Nibbana is, but not the person who enters it. So you can't ever say, I attained Nibbana. You say, I disappeared, and then Nibbana was all that's left. That's more accurate. So when you vanish and disappear and go, then Nibbana is all that's left. So you get an idea of what this letting go really is. So the first way of letting go, throwing things away. They don't belong to you anyway. Your body doesn't belong to you. Your family don't belong to you. Your possessions don't belong to you. Your body doesn't belong to you. It belongs to nature. Nothing belongs to you. So throw it all away, and then you become free. Your past does not belong to you. You grab onto this past, but really it is none of your business. So let it go, and then it's not heavy anymore. You throw it away. No weight, no problem. Future doesn't belong to you. You haven't bought it yet. You haven't owned it yet. It's just it's to come. So don't own the future. Things which don't belong to you. You're a thief if you try and think about the future and control the future. You're breaking your second precept. You're stealing things which don't belong to you. The same as the past. In the past, it's the fourth precept. You're lying because the past is deceiving. What you think happened probably never did happen. Thinking about the past breaks the fourth precept. Thinking about the future breaks the second precept. Taking what's not given to you yet. So when you do things like this, You become free, baggageless. And of course, that's why meditation becomes so easy. So, think what you can give up, not what you can attain. And meditation gets totally simple. A second way of letting go is my favorite one. It is being content. Happy to be here. I won't go through the whole simile because you've heard it many times about the monk who went to prison and described what happens in a Buddhist monastery. And the prisoners were so taken aback, so surprised how ascetic it is in a Buddhist monastery compared to jail. And one of them felt sorry for this monk, having to get up so early and eat all the food in one bowl, and having no TV, not being even allowed to play footy or ping pong. And he said, that's terrible in your monastery. That's so hard in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead? He was invited into jail. And there was a point there. Prisons in Australia are more comfortable than even, well, maybe not Jhana Grove, but certainly more comfortable than Bodhinyana Monastery. You know, you get 3 meals a day in prison and you get to watch movies. So if ever I go to jail, oh, I could indulge. If ever I want to go on a retreat, I just hit a prison officer, I get solitary, like 3 months retreat. Brilliant. It made me contemplate all the time why it is that people don't like going to prison, even though it's quite comfortable, and why people don't mind getting up 4 o'clock in the morning, sitting, meditating, having no sort of sensory pleasures, not watching any movies, not seeing any TV. Just many of you haven't got the food you like. We all have different types of food. Sometimes you're lucky, you get something you like. Sometimes you don't like. Sometimes you get some food, you think you like it, and afterwards you eat it and you get tummy ache. Just like the monks. You get some idea. Even if you've got a lot of choice, you get some idea of monk suffering. We just very little control over the food. Even though there's a lot of food there, we don't know exactly what's in it until after we've eaten it. So, why do people want to come here? Why do people like staying in monasteries? What's the difference, I ask, between being in prison and being free? It became very clear. The only reason was people in a monastery, or you here, you want to be here. In a prison, you don't want to be here. It doesn't matter how comfortable it is or how painful it is. A prison is any place you do not want to be. I remember on one occasion, some years ago, I was in Japan. We were invited to this very wealthy Buddhist summit group, and I was one of the delegation, the Australian delegation. And they put us up because they were really looking after us, and it was a very wealthy group, in really a 5-star hotel somewhere in Japan. And there you were in your hotel room, about 3 or 4 rooms, with a jacuzzi you couldn't use, TV you couldn't turn on, with a big bed you couldn't sleep on, you had to sleep on the floor. I forget what else was in there. And there was a Tibetan monk I was sharing the room with. They invited him, because it's Japanese tradition, to go and take a hot bath. I mean, hot bath is really hot bath. It's you bore you. And this poor Tibetan monk, he was much braver than I was. He came back, he was red, he was roasted, bright red afterwards. It would be lovely to take a photograph of him. What do you do that for? Oh, just to please the host. I'm glad you did it rather than me. So I was just stuck in this room sort of all afternoon. And I got to the point of being so bored. I want to be in a forest, in a monastery. I want to walk meditation. I want to just sit. I could have sat. I was just being stupid. And I realized, Ajahn Brahm, you're in a 5-star hotel, and now you're in a prison. And for that afternoon, I realized I'd made a prison out of a 5-star hotel. You can do that very easy, you know. At the same time that you can be in some very, very simple places, know, in a jungle, in a forest, just a mosquito net. Mosquitoes around you, hot, steamy. And you'd be so content. You feel so free. So I know in my life, you think you can know in your life, it's just the conditions around you, the comfort and discomfort has got nothing to do with freedom. It's whether you want to be here or not. It's whether you're free. I've applied that to my meditation. So sometimes you're in pain, you're tired, you're fed up, you're bored. Do you want to be here? I ask myself. Do you want to be with your fed upness, with your boredom, with your pain, with your tiredness? If you want to be here, you are totally free. Sometimes you're in limiters, but it's not bright enough. Come on, get into the bright limiter. You're in prison. You've got a limiter and you make a prison of it. Absolutely crazy stuff. The reason is because you don't want to be here. You want to be somewhere else. Whenever you want to be somewhere else, whenever you don't want to be here, you've made a prison and you have sacrificed freedom, liberation. So I've used that in meditation, my own and teaching others. The next way of letting go is wanting to be here. Wherever here happens to be. Remember that also when you, in your dying hours. It's painful. It's really discomforting. Your body just will not do anything creating any comfort. How can you be free in the pain and discomfort of death? Please want to be there. And you'll find no matter how much pain, how much discomfort, people around you crying and messing around, you just want to be here. And then you'll have all the freedom you could ever want in life. Because freedom's got nothing to do with your situation, your pain, your pleasure, your comfort or lack of comfort. It's got everything, whether you want to be here or not want to be here. So any time in your meditation you get stuck, ask yourself, do I want to be here? Do I want to be somewhere else? And you'll find you want to be somewhere else. You don't want to be here, which is a problem. That is the core problem. So all you need to do is say, I just want to be here. In my dull, stupid, restless, painful body, stupid mind, I just want to be here. And then you find freedom. And then the mind gets very, very deep. Everything disappears, the thoughts disappear. Because I mentioned, all thinking comes from discontent. If you're really happy, happy being here, there's nothing to think about. Thinking is trying to solve a problem. When there's no problem, there's no thoughts. You get very still and very peaceful. You're just happy to be here. Of course, you're in the present moment. The happiness gives you the sukha. And you just get off into very, very powerful deep meditations as long as you continue. Just, I'm happy to be wherever I happen to be. So want to be here. And any time you don't want to be here, you stop meditating. You've lost a path. You're travelling. So that's the second way of letting go. Wanting to be here, wherever here happens to be. And the third way is another brilliant way of letting go. It's all about generosity. I'm not talking about money. I'm not talking about your service during your chores you do during this retreat. I'm talking about real generosity, which is giving, expecting nothing back in return. Many people have been very generous to this Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center, but there are no names posted anywhere in this retreat center. We don't have your cottage was donated by Mr. and Mrs. Smith. We don't have the kitchen tables were donated by the Chong family. We don't have that at all because that is not giving. That is called in Buddhism buying advertising rights. That's what it is. It's like sponsoring a thing. And you got a name. Ajahn Brahm gave this main hall. Or even the floor, have we? Half that floor was, he's not here today, was laid by Santuti. He hasn't carved his initials on here. This floor was laid by Santuti. We don't do that. We give, expecting absolutely nothing back in return. That is real generosity. Now, how did that apply to your meditation? When you came on this retreat, did you expect to get something? Are you, in the next meditation, meditating, expecting to get something? I will do letting go, I'll follow Ajahn Brahm's instructions, as long as something happens. And of course it never does happen, because that's not letting go. That's giving, expecting something back in return. So what you can do, and it's a powerful way of meditating, you sit down and you just say, I am giving this 1 hour, or 45 minutes, however long you sit. This is my gift to the Buddha. I'm just going to sit down here, meditate. I don't expect anything back in at all. This is a gift of my time to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. And if you have that degree of generosity, giving, expecting nothing at all back in return, your mind gets so still and peaceful. Well, why don't you expect something? Why don't you demand it? Yeah, I'm going to give, expecting nothing back in return. I've done this for 1 whole hour and nothing has happened. And of course that shows you have been expecting something. If you really give, expecting nothing back in return, you give your whole mindfulness to this moment. Whether it's a dull moment, a restless moment, doesn't care, you're just giving it to this moment, expecting nothing back in return, then you find everything gets so peaceful. It's the third way of letting go. No expectations at all. When you don't expect, it means you don't go off into the future. All expectations mean you've lost present moment awareness. Sometimes people don't realize it. They think, yeah, I'm in the present moment. No, part of your mind has been waiting for something to happen, expecting something to happen. And that's why you haven't been fully watching the moment. Yeah, mostly on the moment, but you're watching, is the postman coming yet, delivering my check? So to be fully letting go in this moment has to be no expectations at all. The fourth way of letting go, and I've just gone through the four ways, first three of the four ways of letting go. You know where this comes from if you haven't heard this simile before? This comes from basic Buddhism. This is the fuller explanation of the third noble truth. Letting go of craving leads to enlightenment. And this is the four ways of letting go. Chaga, Pati, Nisaga, Muti, and Alayo. Chaga is giving, expecting nothing back in return. Muti is this freedom, just happy to be here. Pati Nisaga is what I started off with, just with Ajahn Chasim, just throwing things away until you have nothing left at all, just seeing how much you can give away. And the last three, Analiya. Alayo is recognized by many people from the word Himalaya. Hima means snow. It means the resting or abiding place of snow. If anyone knows India, there's another state called Meghalaya. It's the resting place of the clouds. It's a very cloudy state up in the northeast. Alaya means where things rest, take root. Analaya means that nothing can actually take root in your mind. So a thought comes and it doesn't have a place to rest. One of the similes I use is like a bird having no tree to rest on. It flies up into the air and it tries to find a place to roost and can't find a place and keeps going because it hasn't got a place to roost and rest. It just fades away and dies. Just like thoughts. When thoughts come into your mind, do you give them a place to rest? A place where they could put down their roots and grow? Of course you do. That's why a little thought comes in and creates a whole train of thought. So if you don't give thoughts any place to rest, any sort of place to put down their roots and create this train of thoughts, You find that thoughts, they try and get into your mind, but they find no place to settle. Because they have no place to settle, they just die and disappear. Craving, even ill will, comes into your mind. A thought of negativity, you don't give it any place to settle. Which means it just flies off and disappears and dies. Even wanting tries to establish itself in you, but you have nothing you want. Just like that man who came, what can I get you for 100 baht? I allowed that desire to settle inside of me by picking up the piece of paper and writing down all the things which I thought I needed. And because of that, desire grew and grew and grew. When I threw away the piece of paper, it couldn't settle anymore. Desire left. Sometimes I call this Teflon mind. A Teflon mind, nothing sticks. One little irritative thought, and it's just gone. And nothing stays, nothing sticks. It's another way of describing this present moment awareness. You can only be present when the past doesn't stick to you and doesn't linger. If you can do this, you are free. Those are the four ways of letting go mentioned by the Buddha. But I always like to add a fifth. I alluded to it a few days ago. And that's developing a mind which does not measure at all. Which just doesn't judge. Which doesn't differentiate. Because you find, as I mentioned before, that measuring is the prerequisite to controlling. What you do is you measure. The floor is too hard, it's too soft, therefore you need another cushion or less cushions. The room is too hot and too cold, so you mess around with the aircon, or you get another blanket. The talk is too long or too short, so you put a question in the complaints box, not the question box. Can we have shorter talks? Can we have longer talks? Can we have this? Can we have that? Then you start measuring the meditators beside you. You know, that meditator beside you, always getting up and getting down, always just moving around, fidgeting themselves, messing around with their bags. They're really disturbing me all the time. I'm going to give Ajahn Brahm their name and get them blacklisted for the next meditation retreat. I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm what they do in their cottage, their rooms. I know what they're up to. I look through the keyhole. Actually, there's no keyhole. There are people really, really fault-fighting like that. And of course they're also fault-finding on themselves. And because they're measuring people, they're measuring themselves, that's why they have a lot of suffering. They create a lot of business to be done. Light by the way of non-measuring. So who are you? You're beyond measure. This meditation, was it good or was it bad? My very first meditation teacher, he was a layperson, but he was really wise. He gave me some great teachings. And one of the teachings I always remember he gave me, there is no such thing as a bad meditation, he used to say. And I said, you don't know my meditations. Of course he did. But there is no such thing as a bad meditation. And now I look at that, and that's a very wise teaching. Because sometimes, yeah, you meditate, you don't get anywhere. And that's why I got my own simile. Just like the man who goes to work on a Monday and he works his butt off all day. And at the end of the day, he comes home with nothing. No reward at all. He goes on Tuesday as well and again works very hard and still doesn't get any reward. He's getting a bit fed up. He's got nothing else to do. He goes to work on Wednesday, works really hard, still nothing. Thursday morning you think, shouldn't I? He goes to work anyway. Same thing happens. 4 days and he gets absolutely no reward. And he goes to work on Friday. And Friday afternoon his boss gives him this big pay packet with lots of money. He thought, wow, I've now figured it out. From now on I will only go to work on Friday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday I'll stay home. It's just like you said, I don't want any more bad meditation. I don't even want the good meditations. You know, that's like just only wanting to go to work on Fridays when the pay packet comes. And of course we all know the reason you get paid on Friday so much money is because all the work you did Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it wasn't bad days. You're just building up, you know, your credit. So all the so-called bad meditation, just making credit. And you get the paycheck soon. And some of you have been here for 4 or 5 days. You've got no paycheck at all yet. So just think how much money you've been accumulating. It means when your paycheck comes, wow, it's going to be really through the roof. So don't be despondent. Those people have already got some nice limiters and nice have. You've already been paid, so you're not going to get much in the next few days. I know that when I tell this to me, some people say, you know, can I have an advance, please? An advance. No, you've got to work for it first. So there's no such thing as a bad meditation. That's true. So after a while, you stop sort of judging. You stop measuring. And that stopping measuring is a very beautiful way of meditating. This is where you go off into Mahayana. It was that third Zen patriarch's teaching. The way is easy for those with no preferences. That's brilliant. So you have no preferences. Do you want to be still? Do you want to be agitated? Do you want to get jhanas? Do you want to get nimittas? Or just have no preferences? Whatever happens is fine by me. If you give up those preferences, the path is very easy. So still. Nothing to do. When there's no measuring, what can you do? Just sit here and be still. No business. No good, no bad, no joy, no suffering. You know the word measuring? It comes from the word mind. It literally means what the mind does. That's what you do, that's what your mind is. It keeps on measuring things, comparing things, and collating and preferring one thing over another thing. Mostly from ignorance and stupidity. Sometimes you might prefer one sports team over another sports team. You know, one colour over another colour. What are you doing that for? Many of you prefer one type of Buddhism over another type of Buddhism. How can you do that? You only know one type. You haven't really explored any others. We have all these preferences which limit us. So just stop all these preferences. Stop all this measuring and judging. Are you a good meditator or a bad meditator? If you're a bad meditator, it means you've really got some work to do. You've only got 3 or 4 days left. Oh, what a pain. If you're a good meditator, you have to be better. You're still not satisfied. Whenever you're measuring, it gives you work to do. Whenever you stop this measuring, there's no way you can do anything. It takes away all possibility of control. You have to let go. There's no other thing to do. That's why non-measuring, what they call in the Brahma Viharas, the measureless states, apamana. Why is they called measureless attainments? Someone asked this question the other day. I never went fully through it, waiting for this morning's talk. Why are they called measureless attainments? Because loving kindness. It's unconditioned. May all beings be happy and well. Without conditions, the door of my heart's open to you. You don't measure people. Because you're not measuring people, that loving kindness means no controlling of them. Letting them go, letting them be. So, if you can just do no measuring, it's just another way of looking at doing the Brahma Viharas, the measureless states. Open the door of your heart, not comparing. And thereby not measuring and not controlling. So these are some of the ways of doing a deeper letting go. And you notice that these are attitudes of mind, little insights which come up. So when you are in a struggling with your meditation, things aren't working or whatever, try one of these. As I said last night, you bang your head against a brick wall, you don't realize that just around the corner, just a little bit away, is a door. You can just go through it. Or there's a ladder, you can go over that obstacle. So you need to have enough insight, enough wisdom to realize what you're doing, So you can either ask yourself, as I said a few days ago, what do I want? If I get it, is that going to do anything? Is that going to make me really content and happy? No, so just give up all wanting. Have no desire. Be content. See how many things you can throw away and abandon. See just how you can give, expecting nothing back in return. Have a mind which is non-stick. A mind which doesn't judge. And then you find you really can let go. The other day someone asked me about that guy who was taken into Charlie Gardner's because he got into a very deep meditation. You asked, I think it was last night, was it second jhana? No, it was at least the fourth jhana. Interesting thing about that story and similar stories. I remember when he told me the first time, I said, what did you do special this time you got into such a deep meditation? And I knew the answer he was going to give because I know how to meditate. And he said, I really let go. Really let go for the first time. Everybody says the same thing. If you get into a deep meditation, it's because you really let go. And I mention that because it shows you what you're supposed to do, how these things happen. This is people who have been there and done that, and they say how it's done. You don't get into those states through effort, through trying. That's how I was really mindful. Yeah, I was meditating 5-6 hours and really pushing and trying very hard. I never slept at night. I went without food. You know, I was just absolutely silent, never said a word to anybody. You don't get into the states that way. He said, I really let go. So remember that. That is the way to meditate. That's what we're doing. That's how it works. That's how you get into the beautiful breath and the nimittas and the jhanas. You really let go. And I've just given you ways to let go. You're really content. You just, honestly, 100%, I'm just happy to be here. I've got very little control over my life. You know, just have to give a talk. I sit out there and you come and ask me your questions and I think it's all finished and then somebody else comes along. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, there's no one there and somebody catches me and asks me a question on the way to the toilet. And sometimes, you know, I could get very frustrated if I wasn't wise. I think, why does this always happen to me? Why can't I have a bit of peace and quiet? But then, no, I'm happy to be here. And if I find myself not happy to be wherever I am, I know that's suffering. So wherever I happen to be, make sure I'm happy there. And then I'm free. So please remember, this is all about letting go. That's what we mean about by meditation. It's not about vipassana samatha, watching the breath here, watching the breath there, doing kasina meditations or doing visualizations or walking or sitting or lying down meditation or standing meditation. That is not what meditation is. Meditation is learning how to let go. And just watching everything just get so calm, still, peaceful, vanish. And then you too just experience these beautiful states. It's just so peaceful and so nice and so blissful. And now you understand what the Buddha's teaching was. He strived for 6 years. He struggled, he put forth effort, he tried before he became enlightened. And then he realized his mistake. And then he sat under a Bodhi tree, well fed, comfortable, and let go. That's how you gain the jhanas. Totally content to be here. At peace with the world. At peace with yourself. Not judging it. Free at last. So that's this morning's talk on letting go. So please today, really let go. Really, really, really let go. And then you get into this beautiful, peaceful nimittas and jhanas. You'll be fully enlightened by this evening. And then you can go home this evening, fully enlightened, a blessing to the world. Otherwise, you'll have to stay another day. More evening chanting, more morning chanting, more silly jokes from Ajahn Brahm. So that's what you've got left if you don't get enlightened today. So best of luck. Any questions? Any questions about today's talk on really, really letting go? Okay, so off you go.